The following is an exclusive presentation of WI Garden Media, the voice of Garden Talk Radio.
Coming up on the program today, we're going to go over several of the very easy vegetables you can grow in your garden, as well as gardening on a budget. What does it take? Some tips we'll offer. And our guest is Jennifer McGinnis, author, and we'll answer your garden questions. The hour's full, so join us.
You are listening to the most informationally packed hour of garden-focused radio in the country and on the internet with your host, husband and wife team, Joey and Holly Baird. This is the Gardening with Joey and Holly radio show.
And welcome to another edition of the Gardening with Joey and Holly radio show. Thank you so much for allowing us to be part of your day. I am your host, Joey Baird. Beside me is my wife, co-host, best friend, and gardening partner,
Holly Baird.
This program is for you, about you, to help your garden grow better, to maintain your landscape, grow healthier trees, make your grass look greener, as well as preserving what you grow. Happy you're listening to us. If you're tuned in to one of the 18 AM and FM frequencies broadcasting our program here in 2024, through a radio app, through our parent website, which is thewisconsinvegetablegardener.com, at the Season 8 tab at the top of the page, podcast replay, in-studio video replay. Thank you for doing such. We always welcome participation. If you've got a question, comment, want to let us know where you're listening from, you can certainly do that by sending us an email to gardentalkradio@gmail.com. That's gardentalkradio@gmail.com, or give us a call toll-free coast-to-coast at 1-800-927-SHOW. That's 1-800-927-7469 anytime, and if we can't get to you on the air, we'll call you back with the answer to your question. Before we get in the program, Holly, it's time for this week's joke of the week.
Yes, this week's joke of the week. So I stood in my garden really early yesterday morning, wondering where the sun had gone, and then it dawned on me.
There you go. Is that a homage to the solar eclipse earlier this week?
Yeah, sure.
All right. This week's garden joke is brought to you by Rescue.com.
Rescue, American-made products keep your family home and yard protected from pests, insects like wasps, hornets, yellow jackets, flies, ants, and more. Learn more at Rescue.com. That's R-E-S-C-U-E.com.
Well, before we get in the program, I do want to address, we had a question come in on one of our platforms, and it was to the notion of, there's a lot of ads in this program, I don't think I'll listen again. So I explained to the individual, and I'll explain to many of you, because you may be listening for the first time or new to the program. This program, Holly and I produce the program. We are the owners of the program, the company in which this program is produced by. We own that. We do everything to this program, from what you hear here to advertising, finding the sponsors that you hear throughout the program. We have relationships with these companies. We know them personally. That's why some of them have been with us 5, 6, 7, and 8 years on the program. They pay for the airtime that our that you're hearing us on your radio station. It's part of, you know, the way the world works. We don't get anything for free. We ask them to sponsor our program, and in turn, you hear about them, and we pay the station so our program can air, so you can hear it weekly. So I just wanted to clear that up. We work very hard in order to make this happen. We are one of the few, if not only, programs such as this, where we do everything to make it happen year after year. So there you go. Five of the easiest vegetables to grow. Do you have anything to add to that?
No.
Okay. Five of the easiest vegetables that we would say, if somebody said, hey, I want to start a garden, I want a garden, what are some easy vegetables to grow?
I guess I would start with pole beans or bush beans. I'm sure if people have had children or nieces or nephews, sometimes in the spring the teacher will have them plant a bean and the bean grows really quickly. Those aren't any different beans than what people grow in their garden. They're not magic school beans. They're garden beans. And
Jack and the Beanstalk.
Yeah, Jack and the Beanstalk. Yeah. And they grow quickly and effectively, efficiently. Yes. I don't know what word you want to use there. So yeah, beans.
But now beans, bush beans, take 40 to 60 days to reach maturity. And we found several years ago, if you continue to hydrate and continue to harvest, you will have beans all the way till frost. Bush beans can come in a couple of different colors. The green beans that we're familiar with, they have a yellow pod bean, and they have a purple or royalty bean color. In pole beans, they take 70 to 80 days to reach maturity, and if continued to harvest on a regular basis, they will grow all the way to frost. But they only come in one color that I'm aware of, and the pole beans can get 8, 9, 10 feet tall. I've seen them go up a trellis, 8-foot trellis, and then start coming down the other side. So if you have a lot of space, bush beans is fine. If you have little space, pole beans are fine. If you're somewhere in the middle, you can do both.
Yeah, both is good if you have the space.
Radishes.
So radishes, yeah. I think that a lot of people don't think about radishes when they're growing their own vegetables. Maybe they think that they're hard to grow. Maybe they just don't think about them. Maybe they think that sometimes people think that vegetables that you might not normally think of are growing like in different climates. But radishes take usually about 30 days to grow. You can get, is it 16 per square foot,
yes.
I think? Yeah, 16 per square foot. So, because they don't take up much space. So radishes are nice. They grow fast. You can grow a lot, and they grow easily.
And pick a color you want. You got the red champion radishes. You got Easter egg radishes. You got black Mexican radishes. You've got a different variety. Now, the Mexican, I think the Mexican black radishes, they take like 55 days. Everything else, that's a little bit more. There's some that take 40, but the majority of them take 21 to 30 days. And the bonus is if you do not harvest them or let them go to seed, as the pod begins to mature, you're going to have a green pod that kind of looks like a tiny little pea pod. That is edible. Tastes just like the radish. Now, people will say, well, my radishes are super hot. Well, that can be contributed to a number of factors. Primarily, the factor is it's not being hydrated enough. There's not enough water that the plant is uptaking. I have also found that if you are having a, if you have a number of radishes that you taste one and, oh, it's really hot, cut them in half, boil them in water for 5 minutes. That kind of neutralizes some of the heat in it, and it becomes more edible for you if you have a sensitive tongue.
Yeah, or you can just slice them up and then put them on like a salad.
The greens are edible too, yeah. But not.
The greens don't look appetizing to me, but that's just me. So we also have leaf lettuce. Leaf lettuce grows, I don't know, like what, 30 days?
30 to 45 days, yes.
And it's really easy to grow. You can just broadcast those seeds in some soil. You can do this indoors. You can do this outdoors. Mm-hmm. And then you have leaf lettuce.
At the time of harvest, you want to cut it about you want to leave about a quarter of the plant. You don't want to go ground level. You want to go to about a third up the plant and then cut it. Because if you go ground level, it takes much more time for the plant to regenerate growth because you killed all the photosynthesis that the plant has. You leave some of that greenness or the red or whatever color your leaf lettuce is, and then that will allow the plant to regenerate or cut and come again much more rapidly than if you just mow it down to bare soil. And you're going to get maybe one or two cuttings off that before it begins to bolt or go to seed because the day length and the temperature is getting warmer and longer.
Right. So, yeah, so that's the
leaf lettuce.
Leaf lettuce. Thank you. I could not think of that word for some reason. All right. So cucumbers. I think that cucumbers are easy to grow, but I think some people don't realize that cucumbers don't have like a really long growth cycle. So
what does that mean? What does that mean?
It means that from the time you start them to the time that they're done is not very long. It's, I don't know, like what, 80 days?
60, I think, yeah. 60? And the thing 60, is people want to get them in really early, mm-hmm. and they do not like cold soil. That will stunt your plant quicker than anything. Wait until the soil is a minimum of 65 degrees, if not 70.
Right, and a lot of people don't realize this. They think that, okay, if I'm going to, you can plant them when you plant your tomatoes, but it's best to wait like a week or so after that, maybe 2 weeks. And then, again, the growing time is 60 to 80 days about. So is it normal for your cucumbers to be done by September? Absolutely. And a lot of people don't realize this. They get frustrated, but that's totally normal.
But also picking them and not letting them sit on the plant for a prolonged period of time. Once they get to a consumptionable state, you want to harvest them, and that will allow the plant to at least put on more flowers and prolong the plant slightly longer. Also, fun fact, how many varieties of cucumbers do you think there are?
85.
Around 100 varieties of cucumbers exist.
That's close.
I don't think all of them are commercially available, but that is what the magic of the worldwide internet has
it's
to
on,
say.
It's on computers.
Yeah, the internet's now on computers. So, yeah, it's a very beneficial thing for many people.
Let's talk about leeks.
Okay.
I think a lot of people, I remember I had a friend that I told him that we were growing leeks, and he was like, you can grow those in your backyard. And I was like, Yeah, and he thought they were grown in like a bog.
Well, they're much easier. If you have difficulty growing onions, leeks are the alternative.
I agree. They're a good alternative. They grow pretty fast, I guess.
120 days.
Yeah, well, but, I don't know.
But we get leeks the size in diameter and larger than broom handles.
Yeah, for sure.
1.5 to 2 inches, no joke. We can harvest and grow those very well. And the interesting fact that many people in the United States, we're all been conditioned, and that's a bad word apparently, we've all been conditioned to only consume or think it's only edible the white portion on the leek.
I don't know if everybody even knows that. Many people don't even think about leeks.
Right.
So,
but many countries around the world, they utilize the whole leek. And when we prepare a meal, I cut the roots off, clean it real good, and then just the whole plant gets used in a stir fry or whatever we're using the plant for. Nothing goes to waste.
They are delicious. You should grow them.
Yes. And if it's too late now, which in many portions of the country it's too late to get them started, your local garden center has them, and it doesn't matter what variety. We go with American flag leek, but any leek will work very well. I think there's a Lincoln leek as well.
You're a Lincoln leek.
Okay. Kale.
Kale is delicious. If you like kale, some people don't like kale.
Some people have dietary issues where they can't consume a lot of kale.
I can't consume a lot of kale. Okay. Yeah. But kale.
Why is that for people who don't know?
Vitamin K. Yeah. So kale is easy to grow. It grows for a long time, and it's kind of foolproof. Once you get it going, it just does its thing, and then you can even often survive a light frost, and that's your kale.
There's curly leaf kale, there's green, there's burgundy, there's a dinosaur kale, there's a Latin word for the name of that one, but there's a handful of different varieties. The Russian red kale.
Yeah, and there's ornamental kales, but those are still edible too.
Yeah. Back years ago at a place that used to be called Ponderosa, you know, the steakhouse, they would put kale as a garnish on the dishes, and I would always eat it. Apparently, you weren't supposed to eat it back in the 90s. Apparently, that was like a garnish, and you didn't, no, don't eat that, you know. It was kale.
That makes sense now. On our first date, I think the garnish was like parsley or something, and you said kale would be better, and I thought you were joking, but apparently...
You didn't know me very well, did you?
Listen.
Yes.
I don't know.
Finally.
Finally what?
Tomatoes.
Oh, tomatoes. Yeah, so tomatoes...
Hitting the miss here.
Hitting the miss. Yeah. I think this is like, you know, in the eye of the beholder type of thing. Some people are like, oh, tomatoes are impossible to
but
grow.
But everybody grows them.
But everybody grows them. And I think that a lot of times, if you take our tips that we've, you know, always given out, and if you go to our sister website, the Wisconsin Vegetable
parent,
Garden...
Parent
website. The... One of those relations, the WisconsinVegetableGardener.com, and you search like how to grow tomatoes, you'll find our guide information,
multiple videos
there, and you can get some really good tips to grow some very successful tomatoes.
Well, Walton's has a coupon code for you. And who is Walton's, and what does Walton's Inc. Incorporated do?
Yeah, so we know you care about where your food comes from. You might be canning and preserving your fruits and vegetables. But what about the meat? At Walton's Inc., you can get all the equipment, seasoning, and supplies to make sausage, jerky, and any other meat product your way to your high standards. Do you want to make snack sticks that people will actually like? Walton's created MeatGistics.com, an informational site to help you make the best finished product. Walton's even has a full line of their own meat grinders, mixers, and sausage stuffers to help you go from animal to edible. Walton's, everything but the meat. You can use code GROW50, that's GROW50, to save 10% off your order of $50 or more.
When we come back, we're going to talk about gardening on a budget. You're tuned in to the Gardening with Joey and Holly radio show.
Got a question for Joey and Holly? Send it via email anytime to gardentalkradio@gmail.com.
Make hand watering easy and enjoyable with HoseLink retractable hose reels. No more tripping over hoses, kinks, tangles, and avoiding rolling the hose up. With an automatic retractable hose link, saves you time and effort manually coiling up your hose, leaving your focus on the things that will bring you joy in your garden. Available in multiple colors and lengths, you'll be sure to find the retractable hose that works for you. To find out more and to buy online via hoselink.com, use coupon code RADIO10 for $10 discount, valid starting April 1st through May 31st.
Nice garden, and lawn, and flowers.
What could this amazing liquid spray be? Just another fertilizer? Nope.
SoilDiva.net. RootMaker starts your plants off right and keeps them going through harvest. From their seed starting trays with an innovative design that air prunes the roots to their large variety of grow bags, 1 to 60 gallons, their products will provide you the harvest you've never seen before. Visit RootMaker.com. Use coupon code ROOT24 to save 15% off your order at RootMaker.com. That coupon code is ROOT24 to save 15% off your order at RootMaker.com.
Jung Seed Company is a family-owned and operated seed company since 1907 with the largest selection of seeds and plants online. Use coupon code 10TG24 to save 10% off your order at JungSeed.com. The coupon code is 10TG24 at JungSeed.com for 10% off.
Watering is the key to a healthy garden, but it can take up a lot of your time. Water less with Soil Moist. Grow beautiful plants with less water. Soil Moist polymers reduce your plant's watering by 50%. Reduce transplant shock and soil compaction and are effective in your soil for 3 to 5 years. It is an effective watering management aid that is ideal for internal and external planting, such as trees, shrubs, containers, baskets, flower beds, vegetables, and turf. Soil Moist acts as a form of insurance for your plants and is environmentally friendly. It is easy to apply at the time of planting or transplanting. Spend more time doing what you enjoy and let Soil Moist work smarter for you. Bolster your plant's nutrient and water uptake with Soil Moist. Enhance microbial and plant growth. No need to spend extra time worrying about watering your plants. Easy to follow instructions right on the label. To find where to purchase and to see all their products, contact your local garden center or visit soilmoist.com. Have insects such as aphids or fungal gnats invaded your plants? Fight back with Summit year-round spray oil and Summit mosquito bits. Organic Summit year-round spray oil kills insect pests on indoor and outdoor plants. All natural mosquito bits kill fungal gnats, larvae, in container plants. Both products are harmless to people, plants, and wildlife. Summit year-round spray oil and Summit mosquito bit are available at garden centers, hardware stores, and at summitresponsiblesolutions.com.
Dig planting holes from a comfortable standing position. Step, twist, pull, and plant. Visit ProPlugger.com.
Welcome back to the Gardening with Joe and Holly radio show. Happy you're with us today. Thank you so much for that. We're going to talk about gardening on a budget momentarily, but first, a word from our good friends from Honey Bee Healthy.
Since 2000, Honey Bee Healthy Inc. has helped beekeepers maintain healthy and thriving hives, attracting pollinators to your garden this year, as simple as hanging a hummingbird feeder with a mixture of sugar water and Honey Bee Healthy Original. Don't be alarmed to see birds, bees, and other butterflies.
Don't be alarmed.
Yeah, don't be alarmed. Uh-huh. Pollinators can coexist peacefully. Honey Bee Healthy Inc. is offering a 10% discount of an 8-ounce bottle of Honey Bee Healthy Original to the show's listeners. Either enter discount Bee Garden, B-E-E Garden, at checkout. For more information, you can mixing instructions and more, go to visit honeybeehealthy.com. That's honey, the letter B, healthy.com.
If you need any of those coupon codes you hear throughout the program of these great companies that are offering you savings, you can go to our parent website, thewisconsinvegetablegardener.com, and click on the money tab at the top of the page. Well, Holly, gardening on a budget. Now, this is probably what many people go into gardening or many hobbies. They want something different, a way to decompress or get away or relax or change their environment from what they normally do. So many people don't have a bucket full of cash sitting by the bed where they can just go and grab a handful and go purchase what they need. You have to plan, or you have to budget, or you have to be creative with the resources you may have or can create. And that's kind of the model, and the way we grew up on the farm was, if you needed something and you didn't have it, you first looked to see if you could find an alternative that would fit that particular situation, or if that item was broke, you would try to find something that was similar. If you couldn't, then you tried to fix it. If you couldn't fix it or you couldn't build a new one, then you went out and tried to buy one. And the advantage now is we have the advantage of putting a certain item in a search engine and seeing 472 and a half different options of where you can buy it and what the prices are, and a billion and a half reviews where only three of them are actually accurate and not robots telling you this is a good product.
Right, exactly. So anyway,
how would you recommend budgeting for gardening?
I would think about
You and I both didn't grow up in lavish situations where money was not an option or not an issue. Everything had to be very strategic on what you purchased and how to go about doing it.
Right. And I guess for me, I would think about, you know, how much space I wanted to utilize to grow. And at this point, knowing what I know, I would definitely get a soil test for that. If I wasn't sure and I didn't want to necessarily have to deal with a soil test and amendments, I would 100% do raised beds, right, or straw bales or buckets.
Right. So a soil test, you can go to soilsavvy.com. You want the conditioning materials, you go to bellbuster.com. In the Milwaukee area, you can go to blueribbonorganics.com for compost and soil blends. So a little bit of something for everybody. But you want to figure out, yes, how much, number one, and you said how much you want to grow. And many people think, well, I've got a whole backyard, let's just go big. That usually doesn't end well because you may not know how to manage what you've got.
Right. And that's the thing, is that you can start small. If you do have a huge backyard, you can always add more every year. And then you can even, maybe this is your first year doing this, you can go ahead and try something that you know for sure you like. Maybe you have listened to our show. Maybe you have friends, family, whoever.
A neighbor that has done such success. Right.
Yeah, and you can go with that, but then you don't have to go, you know, go big, go huge. You can start small, and then as you learn more, you can make your garden bigger. Or you might be like, you know what? I learned that I don't want to have to do more.
Right.
So you can go either way with that. And yeah, so you want to keep that in mind. I guess, like, if I were to start from scratch now, again, I had mentioned the raised beds, but I would also personally probably keep a little bit smaller than what we have. And I would, at this point, knowing what they sell at farmers markets, I'm good with what we grow. I might possibly grow less if it was just me. And
I mean, we started with in-ground. It got to the point where it was the weeds were too much for us to manage.
Right.
Then we reduced from, I think, about 1,800 square feet to 600 plus, about 700 square feet in raised beds, which is much more manageable and still has the same production as the 1,800 square feet did, because the soil in the raised beds is much better than the ground. And the weeds, yes, there are weeds in raised beds, but much more manageable in the aspect of, oh, it's only 4x12, rather than where do I stop in the ground and say it's good enough for today, because the whole ground, I got 80 feet long here of weeds I got to get through.
Yeah, that was nuts.
Yeah.
It was a lot. And I would also recommend putting some cardboard down if you do raised beds. We didn't do that, which I don't know if it would have mattered this many years in, that cardboard would have broken down.
Oh, yeah, it breaks down the first year. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, so that's, I guess, knowing, like, in combination of knowing what I know now versus what I knew when I was younger, I would do raised beds. I would probably buy starts for certain things, and then I would just direct sow seeds for other things, and definitely utilize an irrigation system. I would look at a lot of it as an investment up front and then do what I could to maintain those.
You can buy a lot of bean seeds. A half a pound a bag of, like, bush beans go a long way.
Right.
And then you can also save some for the next year. But yeah, the irrigation system, it's, you know, a little chunk up front, but plants grow a whole lot better whenever they're properly hydrated, and you get a whole lot more tomatoes, beans, eggplants, onions when there's moisture in the soil and you're not trying to water on a hot day with a hose, and it just doesn't end well. And on a budget, gardeners think you have to have cages for a lot of things, and you sort of do, but you can create those cages and not have to purchase at the garden center or the big box store.
And that's the other thing, is that there's so much information online for all of this that a lot of people will even lay out, you know, how to do this or ideas like we do. And there's things like
Florida weave.
Some people, yeah, Florida weave. Some people also, is kind of switching gears here, you know, coffee grounds. A lot of people might not know you can get free coffee grounds from coffee shops, or you learn that. So that's something that you can use if you need to, or just composting. And there's so many different composters. If you don't want to use a traditional pile composter, whatever you want to call it, you can buy a composter. You can buy these like speed composters.
Aerobin.
Yeah. Even, you know, countertop composters, et cetera. So there's other options as well.
Well, let's go back to the cages, because people don't want to spend a lot of money on cages and they need the support. Simply fence post or thick wood, you know, limbs, and you can create all types of trellises. And like you were talking about, just go to your favorite search engine and type in DIY tomato cages and hit the image button. And you will see unbelievable amounts of information, images, in which you can go, I like that one, I like that one, I like that one. I can combine all three there, and we've got something for pennies compared to dollars that would cost.
And you can also, especially like around Mother's Day weekend, Memorial Day weekend, as in, you know, in the upper portions of the United States, as we get closer to summer, you drive around, you can see that people put this stuff by the curb, and sometimes maybe it is junk, but sometimes it is something that, oh, I clean out my shed, I have all these extra things, I want to put them by the curb, whatever. Marketplace is another place. You might find people like in your community, whether it be coworkers, people you go to church with, bowling league people, whatever, they might have these items. So they're pretty easy to find as well. And you can get creative with like a busted tomato cage. Doesn't mean it's broken forever. You can repair it with some twine, or you can open it up and make multiple tomato supports. So there's a lot of options there.
Just because, I mean, a couple of things you want to keep in mind. One, you're going to need water and an investment of a watering system. You're going to need to figure out if you got good soil, you need to go to raised beds. Just like anything, this is a hobby, but if you're going to do it and have fun and do it successfully and enjoy what you're doing, you're going to have to put a little money up front. People who collect cars just don't start with a piece of junk and go, well, I'll spend 97 years and piece this thing together when I have 87 cents every 3 weeks. They put money into a car, and it's their baby, and they take care of it. Or if you go golfing, you're going to buy clubs. If you go hunting, you're going to buy apparel and firearms in order to properly do the hobby in which you're doing. Same thing here. There are ways in which to save a tremendous amount of money. You don't have to go full bore. You can do this on a very creative means of budgeting.
Absolutely. I totally agree.
So with that being said, Holly, soon it will be warming up and you will want to enjoy your yard without having those grubs and beetles invaders dealing with you and them and fighting with them.
Absolutely. And spring is here. Spring has sprung. And it's time to start thinking about those beetles and grubs in your yard. You know, those Japanese beetles are always just kind of looming in the background, waiting to pop out of nowhere. Grub Gone can be applied to turf or garden or around ornamentals to control your grubs and lessen the impact of beetles that have on your yard this summer. It's easy to apply with any commercial spreader and irrigate into the soil. Biologically, specifically targets grubs and beetles invaders without harming beneficial bees like beneficial insects like leaves, ladybugs, and butterflies.
There you go.
And it's only BT that works, or non-chemical that works. You can find it more at phylumbioproducts.com. That's P-H-Y-L-L-O-M bioproducts.com. And when we come back...
Yes. Jennifer McGinnis will be with us. Author will be with us. You're tuned in to the Gardening with Joey and Holly radio show.
Have a garden question? Give Joey and Holly a call now or anytime 24/7. Just dial 1-800-927-SHOW. If you can't get through, leave a message and they will call you back. Call now, 1-800-927-SHOW.
Garden like a pro in three easy steps and receive customized fertilizer recommendations for your garden or lawn. Soil Savvy helps you determine what nutrients your plants need to thrive. Never again overapply nutrients they don't need. A patented process that makes you a smart gardener. To get your soil test kit, go to mysoilsavvy.com. Transform your exterior wood surfaces with Rubio Monocoat's new DuroGrit. Say goodbye to multiple coats thanks to DuroGrit's incredible patented one-layer technology. Enjoy vibrant, durable color that won't peel or flake, even in the harshest conditions. Rubio Monocoat DuroGrit is tomorrow's UV protection for exterior wood. Learn more at RubioMonocoatUSA.com. Use code Joey for 10% off. That's RubioMonocoatUSA.com. Pomona's Universal Pectin is a high-quality pectin that gels reliably with low amounts of any sweetener. If you're trying to reduce the amount of sugar in your diet, you'll love Pomona's Universal Pectin. Now you can make healthy homemade jams and jellies sweetened to your taste. You can use sugar or honey to sweeten. Pomona's Universal Pectin keeps indefinitely when stored in an airtight container. Easy to use, versatile, and comes with directions and recipes in every box. Find out more and where to buy at PomonaPectin.com. Also available at natural food stores and online.
Water the right amount for the right time with the Soaker Hose from Eaton Brothers. Soaker Hose is one of the best ways to water without drowning your plants. And with a timer, it becomes a set-it-and-forget-it way to keep your plants healthy and happy. Soaker Hose is designed to work at low pressure, seeping water slowly and steadily over the course of 15 to 20 minutes so the water can percolate the soil and get to the roots. Designed and manufactured to be lead-free so no harmful chemicals or odors are added to your water supply. Visit EatonBrothers.com for more information and to buy. Straw bale gardening is all the rage. Get your bale started easily with the Bale Buster Straw Bale Conditioning Formula. This is the only product that has been specifically formulated for use in straw bale gardening. Each unit contains 250 million colony-forming units of trichoderma, fungi, and Bacillus bacteria, in addition to the fertilizer itself, produces fantastic results with a bountiful production of vegetable crops. Start with the best to get the best, traditional or organic formula. Take the guesswork out of conditioning your straw bale. Go to balebuster.com to find out more.
Deer Defeat is an all-natural based animal repellent to keep deer and rabbits away from your valuable plants that is odorless after 30 minutes and dries clear. It creates a continuous invisible shield to protect your plants. Works for 30 days through rain, snow, and freeze. Will not clog your sprayer. Apply to your property without environmental damage. You can spray directly onto your plants up to flowering, then apply around your plants to continue protection. No need to reapply. Money back guarantee. To purchase, go to DeerDefeat.com and use coupon code RADIO to save 10% off your order.
If you could double the life of your raised bed boxes by sealing the wood with a clear non-toxic wood preservative, would you? Well, now you can with a clear penetrating product called Internal Wood Stabilizer. It's 100% non-toxic and easy to apply. Seal your untreated wood surfaces, even chicken coops, by spraying on Internal Wood Stabilizer. It's invisible, seals the wood from the inside out, and never wears off. Recommended by organic gardening experts, Internal Wood Stabilizer. Check it out at TimberProCoatingsUSA.com. Welcome back to the Gardening with Joy and Holly radio show. Thank you for being with us today. Thank you for tuning us in. Holly, let's go to the hotline and bring in our guest for this week.
Jennifer McGinnis, a.k.a. Frau Zinni, is a blogger, photographer, writer, and author who enjoys gardening of all kinds. She is the author of two books, Microfood Gardening, and her newest book, which just came out, Bird Friendly Gardening. Welcome to the program, Jennifer.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here.
Well, we thank you for taking time out of your day, not only educate Holly and myself, but all of our listeners. And let me start with this. What is microfood gardening? That seems like a new term that many of our listeners may not be familiar with.
Sure. So microfood gardening focuses on plants that stay very compact. So you'll be able to grow edibles even if you only have a front porch, a window box, or a windowsill. And part of the fun with microfood gardening is selecting those petite varieties of plants to grow and then choosing the container options to grow them in. So generally speaking, it's any edible plant that's approximately 18 inches or smaller when it has reached its harvest size. And there's some vines that might grow a little bit larger, but they still produce those mini-sized fruits. And personally, I really enjoy growing micro tomatoes because they can be grown in small pots and they take up a fraction of the space as a regular indeterminate tomato would.
Now, would that be like Tiny Tom tomatoes and Tiny Tim peas? Is that, am I right on those? Or, I mean, I'm sure there's other variety names there.
Yeah, those are two of them. I also like the Muhammad tomato, and there's one called Florida Petite. That makes a really nice tomato fruit too.
So your new book, your newest book, Bird Friendly Gardening, just came out a couple of weeks ago or last week. Can you tell us about, you know, an interesting part of it, something that might intrigue our listeners and what they expect when they're going to pick up a copy?
Sure. So when I pitched this idea, my goal was to write a book where people who were not necessarily bird experts would be able to pick it up and say, like, I want to help birds, but I need some ideas. Or I know a little bit about native plants and why they're important, and I want to do more with my garden to support wildlife. So this book is filled with ideas of how to create a bird-centered habitat, whether your available space is a small balcony, a medium-sized yard, or a large plot of land. And it includes so many reference graphics with in-depth information on native plants that either provide food or cover or nesting sources for birds, along with their growing conditions. And I'm really happy that the book is now available. It's something I've worked on for a long time. And I hope people find it to be a useful resource when they're making their gardens more bird-friendly, too.
Now, we've been putting up more bird feeders around our home, and you like to attract – we like to attract songbirds. What are some tips to attract them to your garden or yard? Is there a key food or a type of bird feeder that's more conducive to the birds, or what's the key here, or is there a key?
Yeah, so bird feeders are a great way to attract birds to the garden, and there's a lot of different types of bird feeders. You could have suet feeders, regular seed hopper feeders. Now there's a lot of fun, like tech-savvy bird feeders that are available on the market that help you with bird ID, and they take photos, and they're really cool. But one of the most important things you can do when you're putting up bird feeders is making sure you keep them clean and you remove any soiled food. But if you want to attract even more birds to your garden year-round, planting native plants in your garden will help in three ways, because they will provide the insects that the birds will eat. Also, they may also provide seeds or fruit that the birds eat. They will provide cover to hide from predators, and they can provide nesting material and safe places to build nests to raise their young. So those are all things that birds are looking for if they want to spend time like in your garden. And then one bonus thing that you can include to attract even more birds is having a source of fresh, clean water, such as a bird bath or something that has like a moving water. And that's a sure way to attract them in too.
So not something just stagnant. You want something that has some type of movement to agitate the water. Is that kind of what you're looking at, because they don't like stagnant water, or there's problems with it?
Ideally, moving the water will help keep, you know, mosquitoes away, and then it helps it not to get like murky. Basically, if you wouldn't want to drink the water, the birds probably wouldn't want to drink it either. So anything that, you know, you can keep it fresh and clean, dump it out every couple of days and keep it fresh will definitely help attract them.
They have these really low-key solar panel water fountains that you can incorporate into a little stagnant pond, which is, you know, really neat now.
Yeah. And they work really well. I have a little solar pump that I put in my bird bath, and I, you know, anchor it down with some flat rocks. And just that moving water really helps bring in some birds. They're attracted to that sound. And it's cool. It's fun to see them like splashing around in there when they bathe and when they drink water, and the whole group of them show up. So I'm easily entertained by it.
and the noise is soothing and relaxing to the human as well, not just the birds.
That's absolutely correct. Yeah.
Fantastic. So there is a misconception, especially with older gardeners at times, that birds can be bad for the garden, especially tomatoes. How are birds perhaps not, you know, how is that like an old wives' tale?
Yeah, old wives' tale.
You know, why do people say that they're not beneficial to the garden, they're harmful to the garden? And perhaps maybe why are they attacking the tomatoes?
Yeah. So, for the tomatoes, if you have birds that are actually going after tomatoes, or even like squirrels, cause I think they are more common actually than the birds, it's likely because they're thirsty, especially in the heat of the summer. So you could set up a bird bath on like another side of your garden, and that will likely draw them to that side and away from your tomatoes. Personally, I haven't had that happen. I've definitely had the squirrels come by and do that though. And once they had a ground level bird bath to access, I had a lot more luck with keeping my tomatoes intact.
Right. Well, we often talk about starting vegetable seeds, but not necessarily flowers. What are some annual flower seeds that are best to start indoors, or direct seed or other flower seed starting tips to help us all out? Because we're all kind of focused on the vegetable world, but we don't think, oh, let's do some flowers. Now, Holly's going to do flowers this year for the first time in forever.
Flower seeds.
Flower seeds, specific.
Awesome. Which flower seeds are you going to do?
I'm doing kind of a goth garden concept. So I'm doing some black, like black flowers. I'm drawing a blank as to which ones they are. But there's a cosmos that I have.
Sunflower?
A super dark red. Like, I think it's called like a cherry cola sunflower.
Oh, that's going to be awesome.
And then I think it's either like a pansy variety or a viola variety. Those are kind of the same. So I have some darker colored hued flowers.
That's gonna look awesome. Another nice dark flower that you may want to consider is those Nicotianas. They're really good to start indoors too. I think they need about 6 to 8 weeks before your last frost date. So depending on, you know, where you are right now, you either might just make it or you might just be a little past it. But those are great. And then some dark dahlias might be great to start early too from seed. I really like to start zinnias indoors too, if I have the space, just so I can get a jump on that blooming period, even though zinnias will still do okay if you direct sow them outside. But I have to have my flowers as soon as I can. and then you could also do coneflowers. They can be started from seed now. And in the fall, they'll make really nice individual self-serving bird feeders for those finches, because they will fly onto them and perch on them and eat from them. So that's another great plant that you could start now. And, it takes a little bit of time to, it does do well with a little bit of a head start indoors, but you should be able to have blooms by the end of the season.
Well, I want to circle back to the bird feeder thing, because what we've experienced, and I'm sure other people have, is you have two or three bird feeders and everything's going great, and then the next year or later in the season, you have a pasture of grasses underneath that bird feeder from everything they've kicked out, the millet or the milo. Is there any reason why they're kicking that out? Is it because it may be low-quality bird seed and you need to kind of up your game and get the better stuff, or what's going on there?
It really depends on the type of birds that are coming to your feeders. Like if you get a lot of house sparrows, they will naturally just kind of pick through everything and throw it on the ground, which can be like a win-win for those mourning doves and the other Native American sparrows that kind of feed along the ground. So they'll pick up most of it, but it is likely that you'll have some discarded waste. There's a certain bird seed that birds will eat, like cardinals really like safflower seed. So, if you want to bring them in, you could put that out. Black oil sunflower seed is a good choice too. The millet will attract, I believe, the house sparrows and the doves. So, it really depends on who you're looking for. It's not necessarily that your quality of seed is bad. It just might be who's showing up at your feeder. And usually in the spring, it is good to kind of sweep everything up and try to get to it before it starts sprouting. Cause you're right. It could be like a little forest by the time May comes around. Right.
But also if you want to be aware of what these seedlings look like when they're germinating, because if they're sunflower seeds like that you want to let them be, because you can have very pretty sunflowers. And that's how we've had several volunteer sunflowers in our garden, because the birds have kicked them out of the bird feeder.
Yeah, that's a great point. Especially with those black oil sunflower seeds. I think in my case, usually they get trampled by the squirrels, but if you have them showing up and growing, that sounds fantastic.
Have you ever had experience with more of like the bully birds, like the crows, and even I think sometimes a red wing blackbird? Mm-hmm. If people do have too many of those in their yard, do you have any advice as to how to kind of get them out to encourage the more friendly birds, I guess?
The more beloved ones.
Yes. Yeah.
We get a lot of flocks, especially now in the spring, of the European starlings coming through and like the grackles, and they will definitely like take over the feeders and just wipe you out, especially if you have suet out. So one way to try to discourage them and have them move along is, you know, by taking away the suet for a little bit, because they really do love to chow down on that. And then choosing seed like the safflower seed, they will pass over that and they really won't eat it unless they're absolutely starving. But for the most case, they'll probably fly to your neighbor's house and raid their bird feeder instead, and leave yours alone. So that's kind of one way to tackle it. If they really become like a nuisance, you can, you know, stop filling the feeders for a couple of days until that flock moves along. That's probably the easiest solution, depending on how aggressive they are showing up.
Okay. Well, Jennifer, we greatly appreciate the time you've offered. How can people, how can our listeners find out more about you? How can they get your books and all of that?
Oh, sure. Well, you can visit my website at frauzinnie.com, and that's FRAUZINNIE. I'm also on Instagram and Facebook as frauzinnie also. And Microfood Gardening and Bird Friendly Gardening is available at all the major booksellers and on Amazon. So it's pretty easy to find and locate. So I hope a lot of people check it out and really enjoy what it has to offer.
Well, we thank you for your time and the information you've shared with Holly, myself, and all of our listeners. Thank you very much for that.
Oh, thank you so much. Thanks again for having me on.
Absolutely. And when we come back, it's Your Garden Questions, Our Garden Answers. You're tuned in to the Gardening with Joey and Holly radio show.
Got a question for Joey and Holly? Send it via email anytime to gardentalkradio@gmail.com.
Blue Ribbon Organics, providing locally made organic compost and soil blends for gardeners, farms, landscaping, and more. To find our products nearest you, visit BlueRibbonOrganics.com.
Happy 65th anniversary to David J. Frank, Southeastern Wisconsin's leading landscape company. Their award-winning services include everything from lawn care, landscape maintenance, design, construction, renovation, irrigation, sustainability, and more. Big or small, let the experts at David J. Frank handle the hard work for you. Find out more at DavidJFrank.com. Goodbye biting bugs and plant invaders. No More Bugs by Naturally Green Products is your answer. No More Bugs is DEET-free and not sticky on your skin. USDA certified, No More Bugs has been a favorite by consumers across the country for over 14 years. More than a repellent, it is safe for you, your plants, pets, and home. Available online at nomorebugs.net, Amazon, Walmart.com, and the Home Shopping Network. Take the guesswork out of composting with the Aerobin 400 or smaller 200 for easy composting. The Aerobin mimics how nature decomposes waste. The Aerobin is easy to use. You prepare your balanced organic waste. Just open it up, drop it in, and close. After a short time, fertile compost is produced, which is easily accessed via the lower side door. The thermal insulation in the Aerobin conserves heat, leading to rapid breakdown of the biomass, and works efficiently year-round, even in cooler regions. There is no need to turn the biomass, and it is pet and rodent resistant. It has little odor and can kill annoying weeds and seeds. It is BPA-free. The Aerobin 400 or 200 comes with a reservoir at the bottom to collect the leachate. When diluted, makes for great compost tea liquid fertilizer. Aerobin composts kitchen and garden waste quickly. Easy to assemble with no special tools needed. The Aerobin makes composting rewarding and easy. Go to burpee.com or homedepot.com to purchase. Make watering easy. DripWorks provides quality drip irrigation supplies and equipment to gardeners just like you for all your growing needs across the U.S. and Canada. Purchase online at DripWorks.com. Wind River Chimes will always be the inspiring harmony. With a large selection of customization options, you will find the sound that soothes you. Visit WindRiverChimes.com to shop and find out more. Mantis Tillers, the premium long-lasting gas-powered tillers, are the perfect solution for any garden. This Mantis machine is available with 2 or 4 cycle engines with a 19-inch or 16-inch tilling width. Your DIY companion in your garden and your lawn converts easily for edging, aerating, and more with optional attachments. Find details at Mantis.com.
Welcome back to the Garden with Joy and Holly radio show. Happy you're with us. Time for garden questions and answers. You've got a question? Send it on over. GardenTalkRadio@gmail.com. GardenTalkRadio@gmail.com. Or you can give us a call toll free coast to coast, 1-800-927-SHOW. 1-800-927-7469. Had a number of questions come in this week. We're going to see what we can get through to the top of the hour, Holly.
Yeah, so the first question is, at what size is good to transplant my pepper seedlings from the party cup? There are like 15 trays, so I want them to each have their own spot.
Depends on what, 3 to 4 inches is the ideal size. sometimes life gets in the way and they get 5-6 inches tall. You really don't want to get them any taller than about 6 inches because they're going to get starting in root bound. And I think we've got a question about how to separate those in a moment. But about 3 to 4 inches, and that's a good time to when we would transplant them over into the root maker 32-cell trays that air prune the roots in order to have a more fabulous root system, which is a more healthier plant. So 3 to 4 inches, and that would be a good standard for any plant that you're dealing with. About 3 or 4 inches if you're mass planting in a party cup or in a pot, and because you want to save space up front, we do that, and then we sort out and put them in their own distinct little home until they're ready to be hardened off and transplanted out. Okay, next question here. Do you add vermiculite or perlite to your soil?
So we do not, but so vermiculite and perlite are not the same thing. Vermiculite is better for water retention, and that means that the moisture retains key nutrients for your plants and cuttings to soak up. And then perlite is more for drainage. So it means that, like, it's going to help break up heavy soil. Whether you have clay soil or sandy soil, it's going to help with that. We don't add perlite or vermiculite to ours because we use compost.
Compost will do basically the same thing. It'll help break it apart, that density of clay, and or will begin to build soil in the particular situations where you have very loose and porous soil. So, and when you look at the by volume, compost is really much cheaper by the bulk than the bag of vermiculite or perlite. But each situation is different, and your mileage may vary. Just because one person doesn't mean on YouTube or an article, that doesn't mean that that's the right answer for you. You got to do your research, but that is our thoughts on that.
Now, if you've been adding vermiculite or perlite to your compost forever, just keep doing it.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. There you go. Okay, what's wrong with my tomato starts? They are curling up. Are they overwatered? Too much light? The soil is soggy to the touch. I'm afraid I overwatered them. Could it be root rot?
Yeah, so overwatering can cause leaf curl, and underwatering, they are sitting water that can cause root rot to close. Too close to light might be a cause. So what you want to do is let them dry up a little bit. That should help. And then you can get yourself on a watering schedule so you're not drowning your plants.
If you're bottom watering, the water should not be setting stagnant in the tray. You should allow the water to wick up in an hour time and then drain off the excess water that's in that tray. That's where the root rot is going to develop. If the plants are over or are underwatered and the soil is extremely dry, they'll curl up too. It's just as bad both ways that you're damaging the cell wall of these plants if you're overwatering or underwatering. You want the soil to be damp, like a sponge, consistently, just like you would have on a drip irrigation system out in the garden. So keep that in mind. It also has a lot to do with your atmosphere in your home. If it's a very dry atmosphere, those plants, those seedlings, those trays are going to dry out much, much quicker than they would if they were. It was more of a humidity, more higher humidity. So keep that in mind. Also, the light can have something to do with it, but mainly it's either you're overwatering or underwatering, and if you've got root rot, you might be able to save the plants, but back off on the watering.
All right, so another question is, what is the best way to separate my seedlings? I have them planted in cells from mass planting.
To put them in cells for mass planting. That's what I was referring in the first question. I knew there was another one coming here. So this is the only exception to don't let them dry out. You want these to dry out almost completely. Let's say you have a party cup, solo cup, rest in peace, Toby Keith. You want to let them, he passed away.
I know.
Okay. You didn't. Okay. Anyway. So you want to let let's say there's 15 pepper plants in that party cup. You want it to dry out almost completely. Tipping the party cup upside down and caressing the hand around the soil, not the plants, then laying the plants on a hard surface and then rolling it back and forth to let all of that soil, that dry soil, break apart and away from the root system. Then you can gently remove the seedling and put it in its individual cell with good hydrated potting soil, slow-release fertilizer, that type of material, and you're good to go. You don't want to start tearing them apart, because when you start tearing them apart, you're going to damage roots and damage plants.
Right.
It doesn't always work that way, but that's the best way we have found. You're going to have some casualties. That's just the way it is, but that's the way it's going to be best for you to separate those plants.
All right, so we had another question here. Marilyn, this is from one of my friends. The house where I grew up is in Southern California, about 5 miles from Disneyland, Zone 10A. I have a lot to do. It's nearly half acre. Over the last several years, I stopped watering, so the lawn is mostly dead and gone. I've considered different rainwater harvesting options and switching from sprinklers to drip. Right now, I've got some baby tomato plants to put in the ground. I'm thinking of trying out some Oya balls connected to a simple bucket. Also digging and amending a 3-inch deep before bed behind a waist-high retaining wall. It's alongside the garage. I'll start some asparagus roots, strawberries, and leafy greens there. Any advice before I start growing more or start growing at all? I had suggested definitely getting a soil test done.
In the raised beds. Let the grass go. The grass is done. Don't worry about that. That's a waste.
Yeah. No, I don't think she's wanting to do anything with the grass.
That's just part of the story of the background, backstory. Okay. Yeah.
And I did explain to her that, you know, she understands that we're not in the same zone here where we are.
Right.
But, and I did suggest some other resources for her as well, like university extensions, things like that, local university extensions. But I would suggest a soil test from Soil Savvy.
Irrigation system, either Oya's or a timer system like DripWorks has, where works really good, or Eaton Brothers. They have a soaker hose system with timer because you want to, in Southern California, it's going to be hot 14 months out of the year. So you want to have a lot of moisture, consistent moisture, not over watering. And that's kind of what we harp about a lot on the program is don't over water. You want just enough. Damp. Make it damp. So, so that will be good. Soil test, irrigation system of some sort. Let the garden work for you. Don't work the garden to make it work for you.
Right. It's absolutely smart to, you know, restore what you can. But, again, just be realistic. And I also said, you know, start small. Don't overdo it. Otherwise, you're not going to enjoy it as much as you perhaps want to.
All right, next question here. What do you think of Florida weave trellising for tomatoes? We talked a little bit about this in segment 2 on gardening on a budget. It's a form, a method in which you utilize heavy-duty metal post and string in 1-foot increments up the post across the garden or across the tomato bed, in which the tomato plants will weave, and you'll have to help them, up and through each string. And the string, as the tomato bears fruit, begins to get heavier and hangs on that string, so you don't need a tomato cage. Works very well, very cost-effective. People will often use juke rope or an all-natural twine.
Some people use wire, too.
Wire. We use agricultural twine. What they wrap the big round bales with in the field, you can get a 6,000-foot, it's 20,000-foot ball of orange twine, which you'll never use up.
Right.
It doesn't biodegrade. It is a plastic, but it will never – you don't have to worry about the tomatoes getting too heavy and it's snapping the string. That's for sure.
It's very durable, very durable. And it's not going to, you know, get in the elements, the rain.
These are designed to go on these big bales and not be damaged. Years ago, it used to be natural twine. Then you'd have mice get in there, and then the weather and the bales would bust apart when you try to move it. So they then went with this plastic, and there's yellow. And then there's orange, and there's a thicker twine and a thinner twine. We use the thinner twine, 20,000 feet. That's like 6.5 miles. You're going to have plenty of string for the kids to play with and in the garden with no problem at all. If you're a purist and you want to be more environmentally friendly, there are natural twines in a much smaller capacity. I think there's like 6,000 feet on the natural twine, so you can go that route. All right. Have you ever done a Three Sisters planting? I've never grown corn.
Well, so corn, when you grow corn, it is a heavy nitrogen feeder, so you are going to have to boost your soil with nitrogen, and we have done this.
Well, explain the Three Sisters gardening concept and why there's kind of a misconception about it.
Sure. So Three sisters is theoretically that you grow the corn becomes a trellis for the beans, you grow pole beans, and then you grow squash within that same garden plot as ground cover.
And people think that the beans create nitrogen to feed the corn, which is simply not the case.
No, it's not the case. Scientifically proven time and time again that there's not enough nitrogen coming off the roots of the beans to feed the corn. However, the concept of the squash being ground cover, the beans using the corn as a trellis, and the corn being a trellis is absolutely correct. That can occur. But as far as the beans feeding the soil, nitrogen in the corn being able to access that nitrogen is not true. So you want to, you know, you want to make sure you do have high nitrogen in your soil before you start planting that corn. I also told this person that corn does need to be grown in blocks of like 4, 8, etc., because it's air pollinated. So it's not typically where you can grow it in rows, but they have to be rows next to each other.
So it's something to look into. There's some ways to do it right, and there's a lot of ways to do it wrong. Well, that brings us to what we learned today. Holly, what did you learn today?
I learned that you like to eat kale as a garnish.
Okay. I learned
that, ever since the beginning of time,
and I learned that in the study for this show that there are over 100, about 100 varieties of cucumbers. Honey, what we learned today is brought to you by honeybeehealthy.com.
Whether you're a gardener, a bee hobbyist, or a professional beekeeper, Honey Bee Healthy Inc. has the product to help you maintain a healthy hive and thriving garden. For more information on how to use Honey Bee Healthy in your garden, visit honeybeehealthy.com. That's honey, the letter B, healthy.com.
Tune into the program next week where we'll be discussing practical gardening and good mulch, bad mulch. Our guest is very well known TV host of Growing a Greener World on PBS, Mr. Joe Lampa, will be with us, and we'll answer your garden questions. So until next week, for
Holly Baird,
I'm Joy Baird, and we will see you in the garden.